Voilà, vous êtes de retour sur Ergot Radio en direct sur les ondes de Radio Panique. On est actuellement toujours dans la ZRT, la zone de radio temporaire dans la galerie de l'Erg. Donc pour vous maintenant, on a un petit débriefing de qu'est-ce que c'est l'Erg, qu'est-ce que c'est le séminaire. Mais en fait, donc ça c'est les aléas du direct, on a l'invité phare du séminaire qui va arriver en fait, qui va venir s'asseoir avec nous discuter. C'est sur lui qu'a été basée la thématique et le nom du séminaire After Empire, Melancholia or Convivial Culture. C'est monsieur Paul Gilroy. Voilà, donc il arrive. Voilà,
donc c'est vraiment parfait pour introduire le séminaire. Et juste après son intervention, on aura des interviews donc, de Laurence Rassel, directrice de l'ERG. Peggy Pierrot, qui est un peu la mastermind coordinatrice de cet événement. Et puis après, on continuera avec des petits débriefings, des workshops qui se sont déroulés hier. On attend juste Paul Gilroy.
Voilà, il discute. Il a donné une conférence hier à Beaux-Arts où on a tous pu assister. Et donc, pour cette interview, du coup, on va passer en anglais. Yeah, you can have a seat here. Voilà, on va passer à l'anglais, donc... Souvenez-vous de vos cours d'école.
Hello. Thank you so much for your time.
Tu m'as coupé.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Hello. Thank you so much for being here. If you want to adjust your microphone, your headphone, the sound of your headphones, you can do it here.
I think it's all right. Thank you.
Perfect. So Paul, first of all, thank you so much for randomly joining our radio show.
Sure.
Your conference yesterday was fascinating. It was very, very interesting. Can you summarize sort of what your conference was about?
Sure. Well, I was trying to explore the history of music that had been made by black settlers and their children and their grandchildren in my country, particularly in the big cities of Britain. And I was interested to see, first of all, how we might hear the music they made as something that was not trying to be a copy of music made elsewhere, but had begun to develop its own unique characteristics. And I'm interested in how that music, which was for so many years a kind of carrier of our political sensibilities, how it had fared in a world which has been greatly depoliticized, and in a world where music no longer has value, where people download things, as you know, they have no value and no history. So I'm interested in trying to invest those things once again with value and with history.
This whole event is named after a book that you wrote, After Empire, Melancholia, or Convivial Culture. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Can you maybe tell us a little bit about that book?
Sure. I mean, in that book, really, I was struck by the pathology in many European nations. I think the Belgian situation is somewhat different, where there was a massive, undisclosed yearning for the beauty and comfort of a colonial nationality, a colonial government, and that people associate the greatness of the past with the capacity of the country to dominate large parts of the world. And with the empires lost, and I think this is true, of course, of the Dutch, it's true of the French, it's true of the British, in many ways also true of the Italians. I think, you know, there are elements of the history of the relationship between Belgium and the Congo that would also fit this, that the loss of all those colonial possessions has an effect, not just an economic effect, but a sort of psychic effect, a social effect. So I'm saying, well, what do these countries have to do in order to process those losses and stop those losses becoming part of the fuel for the resurgence of the ultra-nationalists in each of these areas? And my book really addressed that issue in the context of contemporary British political life.
Thank you. Another question, maybe I was wondering, what is convivial culture?
Well, I don't know this city at all well, but I'm sure if we go out of this building and we walk a little way, we will find places where different waves of settlers have come and have made home and been found to be at home. And I don't think, you can please correct me if this is right, that here you have areas of segregated dwelling that are quite like those we find, for example, on the edges of Paris or on the edges of Stockholm. It drifts in that direction, but the intensity, the simplicity of those worlds is not quite equivalent. So when I say convivial, I'm interested in the sharing of space, the sharing of institutions, the sharing of streets, and how people negotiate their differences in those contexts. Who's in your school playground? Who's in your doctor's waiting room? Who's there beside you? You know, who do you, when your bicycle breaks or your car breaks, who do you take it to get it repaired, and what conversations follow from that? I'm not saying there isn't conflict. Of course, there's always going to be conflict. But most of the time, people seem to have evolved ways of managing those conflicts as they arise. And I think this is a good skill to cultivate, to be able to work, you know, in a complex linguistic environment, a complex cultural environment, not allow the simplifying magic of racist classification, racial imagination to enter into our ability to negotiate that space.
Definitely. Well, Brussels is a very interesting space for that. For the, when you talk about, yeah, I think it's my microphone. C'est mon micro. Sorry, technical problems. I think Brussels is very interesting for that. When you talk about shared space and how we all have our own cultures and how we interact with each other, Belgium in general has two cultures who are forced to live together, and Brussels is sort of the core of this. Co-living, something as ridiculous as you see the bars in the center. Some of them are more Flemish, and if you don't know it, the bartenders were like, you know, okay, you speak French, and I'll speak the little French I know. And then some bars are more French speaking, and so you would find the different crowds, but they all interact with each other. But they're still, even something as simple as the bar scene in Brussels is very.
Yes.
It says a lot about how the city is organized.
I think I've encountered that before. I suppose I think that a lot of the time people are imagining a relationship with nationality in which they think if they can just chip away, just clean off that bit, they'll be left with the bit that is the right bit, the pure bit, the authentic bit, the bit that really belongs. And I think my conviviality argument is the opposite of that. It would say that if you're trying all the time to purge, to dispose, to shrink it down to the perfect dimension, that won't protect you.
Obviously.
That will not protect you. And that the impulse is an unhealthy impulse.
It takes away.
We have to recognize it, but we also have to find an answer for that desire. Of course, people want to be safe, they want to be secure. They want to be comfortable, but to think that the condition of being safe and comfortable is not to be exposed to difference.
It's a ridiculous idea,
yeah.
Definitely. Especially, I think these kind of speeches are very important to be open nowadays. And us as art students, and we're in an international context of Brussels, we definitely have to be open to all of this creativity and embracing each other's differences, because that's how we can be complete as artists, as what we aspire to be.
Yeah, and you find out which differences matter and which differences don't really matter quite so much. I mean, I think we're all in an environment much of the time these days where we defer to difference, and I don't know, I mean, maybe the moment of difference was a necessary moment, necessary phase, but perhaps the situations we're now increasingly in require from us a different imaginative habit, and that might involve taking the risk of being more universalistic in our understanding of how differences relate to one another.
And do you think teaching about music and how, like, what's the impact of that music can have on that, on these issues?
Well, I think that that is a real resource in this conversation, because it is pleasurable, because it is a universal feature of human cultures and dispositions, and it isn't always linguistic, it isn't always representational, it involves the body in ways that don't necessarily seem ideological or even cognitive. Some of it is of physical responses to stimuli which are not things that can be captured in language, you know. So yeah, I think music is a real resource to bringing new conceptions of the universal into people's consciousness.
One of the ideas that it really hit me in your conference last night was the idea of play and not work. Can you maybe talk a little about that?
Well, you know, with the rise of artificial intelligence and the processes that were set in motion with the, you know, the widespread dominance of semiconductor technologies and all of these things that have been amplified by the technological revolution that we've gone through, industrial work and forms of labor that we know from the 19th and 20th centuries are vanishing. And it's a bit, I suppose, like the situation that people faced in the 19th century when they looked at agricultural labor. I feel that the very category of labor itself is not a powerful category anymore. So if we're going to have a left, and I think our future needs a left, it's going to have to find a new way of explaining its hopes that does not rely on the abstraction labor. It doesn't look to work as being the place where one is most intensely oneself, where the collectivities that matter more than any other collectivities, the basis of solidarity. Work isn't the only place where these things can be made. You know, we've known this for a long time, but we haven't actually managed to be able to translate that into a political project of any kind.
Well, that's very interesting what you're saying, because I don't know if you know about the documenta happening. And they're already having conferences in Athens. I was talking about this yesterday on the radio. And I went to one of them 5 days, 3 days ago. And it was about, it was made by Franco Bifo Berardi. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, he used to live in Finsbury Park near me in London.
And he was saying exactly this idea that we had to look at labor differently, that with the advance of technology, we had to look away from our focus on capitalism and work. And and it was fascinating, but the setting of this conference was very interesting, because it was in an assembly full of people from Greece or from all over, like me, and it was a discussion about opening the minds, and it was called the exercise of freedom. Uh-huh. And it was fascinating, because it was exactly those kind of idea that's popping up and appearing on the debate table.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's heartening to know. That, and it's interesting to me that conversation is something that the world of art institutionally is leading, you know?
That
the world of art is in advance of the conversation that the politicians are having about these things. And that's been true also for some time now, I think we can say, that artists and curators and institution leaders have been inclined to explore these questions before they find expression in the political world.
Well, obviously, like, it's not the politicians who are going to criticize what they do.
No, indeed. But it's the politicians who are going to have to find ways of governing a society where people don't work, where there is no work for people to do.
Definitely.
And, you know, anesthetizing, self-medicating with your phone is not the answer to that problem. Self-medicating with your Instagram is not the answer to that problem. I don't think. I mean, maybe you disagree, I don't know.
I mean,
a lot of that going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think we around the table are still part of the generation who is still, like, who still grew up a little bit, like, our childhood was not based on technology as much as it is right now for the younger generations.
Younger people,
so I guess we're the still lucky ones, let's say, who know, like, the impact it has on our lives and who are kind of self-aware of the technologies. For example, I know Gabriel still doesn't have a smartphone, and it's okay. Like, but I know if we were from a I know that if we were from a different generation, there would be more of a stigma, you know, to conform and to you know, participate and to.
There's still a big stigma.
What was Bifo saying? Get off the internet. Mm-hmm. Go and talk to people online. You know, get offline. Be face to face. Share space. Share time. Make time, you know, steal your own time back.
Definitely.
By not being within the tempo of the techno culture. I mean, these are easy things to say and very, very difficult to things. I mean, you know, I don't myself try to control the use of the phone, the place of the phone within my own teaching space. I encourage people not to, but my partner, she teaches in another university. And she developed this practice of saying to everyone who came to the class, here's the table, put your phone on the table at the front. And look, I will do the same thing. Of course, it's always her phone that goes off because it's me ringing her, you know, whatever. But, you know, we do this. But it's interesting to see the forms of anxiety, almost ontological discomfort, which come from the separation between the phone and the person. And this is a remarkable change, actually, to have happened so fast.
Paul Gerway, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Delighted.
Thank you.
How long are you going to be broadcasting?
We're broadcasting until... we're broadcasting until 5. On air, and then here still at the radio.
We're done. Yeah. We'll be gone tomorrow.
Voilà, on disait juste que ils nous demandaient jusqu'à quand on émettait, donc on va émettre sur radio, sur les ondes de Radio Panique jusqu'à 5h et encore quelques trucs juste sur le stream et dans la galerie de l'Ergue. Paul Gilroy, merci beaucoup. Et donc voilà, on va essayer de retourner. À notre programmation, mais voilà, c'est les aléas du séminaire, les gens qui se baladent, les rencontres, les discussions qu'on a envie de continuer pendant des heures.